you cannot make NDAs better. There is no making them better. They do not have a place in this area. You can have a confidentiality clause to protect a victim, but you do not need a blanket non-disclosure that goes both ways. There is no ethical moment where protecting a perpetrator is okay.
My name is Sarah Carnegie, and I head up the Legal Projects team at the International Bar Association. The IBA has been doing significant work on bullying and sexual harassment in the legal profession over recent years, publishing a groundbreaking report in 2019, which was followed by a global awareness-raising campaign. This work led me to meet Zelda Perkins, whose own experience in this area, notably with regard to the use of non-disclosure agreements, was of real interest to me. Perkins is a theatre producer for Robert Fox Limited and co-founder of the campaign Can't Buy My Silence. She was previously employed as the personal assistant to Harvey Weinstein in Miramax in the mid-1990s. In 1998, Weinstein sexually assaulted Perkins' assistant at the Venice Film Festival. On their return to London, Perkins and her colleague were advised to settle, and this included a non-disclosure agreement requiring complete silence of both parties. In 2017, journalists investigating Weinstein's behaviour and history of abuse contacted Perkins, who decided to break her silence and speak out about her experience. The rest is history, and Weinstein is now a convicted sex offender serving a 23-year prison sentence for offending dating back to the 1970s. Professor Julie McFarlane is a Canadian law professor who has won awards for her work in advocating for access to justice. In 2016, during negotiations with the Anglican Church, she persuaded the church and their insurer to end the default practice of forcing non-disclosure agreements on victims of clerical abuse. She has been involved in advising politicians and policymakers in Canada, Ireland, and other jurisdictions how to craft legislation to limit the use of such agreements. Perkins and McFarlane co-founded their global campaign Can't Buy My Silence, which was launched in September 2021 to end the misuse of NDAs. They are currently working with legislators and activists in many countries to bring about important changes. So thank you both very much for joining us today, Zelda and Julie. It's fantastic to have you with us. I'd like to, if I may, just start with setting the scene about both of your experiences of having fallen foul of a non-disclosure agreement. Zelda, could I start with you, please?
Sure. So I worked for Harvey Weinstein for about 5 years as his PA back in the 90s, and towards the end of that time, I had my own assistant who, on her second meeting with Weinstein, was sexually assaulted by him. We constructively dismissed ourselves from Miramax, and we were given no aid from Miramax or HR, and were just told that we needed to get ourselves a good lawyer. Once I spoke to a lawyer, where I presumed we would be taking Weinstein to court to have justice served for a grave sexual assault, I was pretty quickly disavowed of this by my own representation, by my own lawyers. This wasn't once we'd got into any form of negotiation. I was told very clearly that I had no leg to stand on. We had no power. It was a he said, she said situation. And that our only option to resolve this was to take some form of, enter into some form of damages agreement. At this point, we were told that meant accepting money to recompense for the damage that had occurred to my assistant. And for that, we would get a reference, money, so that we had time to work out what we were going to do next and move on. This was not what either of us wanted to do, but I very specifically was against taking any money because I felt this changed the relevance of the whole action, but was told very clearly that to even enter into negotiations, because once I was told that this was the only way forward, I said, well, then we need to be able to put into this damages agreement caveats to stop Weinstein's behaviour, because all that matters out of this experience is that his behaviour stopped. At this point, I was told that the first step in any negotiation was financial, monetary, and that if we didn't make a monetary demand, I wouldn't get any of my further demands. And again, so this is before we were even involved with Weinstein's representation. This was my own representation.
This is just your own lawyers telling
you.
Yeah.
I was only 25 at the time. My colleague was 24. Neither of us had any legal training or experience. And it was made very clear that if we tried to do anything through the criminal court, we would be destroyed. And not only would we be destroyed, but so would our families. At this point, there wasn't any mention of confidentiality or non-disclosure. And I think for us, the hardest thing was that even though we had perfectly good representation, including counsel from Doughty Street, our lawyers were having to fight incredibly hard to do something that, from our point of view, morally and ethically, was very binary. You know, we had an employer who had sexually harassed and sexually assaulted both of us. I'd been harassed, she'd been assaulted. And all we were trying to do was make this better by putting in clauses to stop his behaviour, to start a HR system that protected staff, that he had to go to therapy to deal with his issues, of which I had to be present for the first two so that he couldn't pretend it was for something else, that if he attempted to make a settlement for the same reasons in the ensuing years, that either he was fired from his own company or it was reported to Disney, who were the parent company of Miramax at the time, and that our agreement was made public, was disclosed to Disney, so that they understood the severity of his actions. And when I came up with a lot of these arguments, there was meant to be a big donation to a rape charity. And then within that agreement, obviously, there were very, very, very stringent non-disclosure clauses, including using our best endeavours not to help the police if there was a criminal case brought against Weinstein in the future, also not to help other legal representation if there was a civil case brought, that we weren't allowed to speak to a therapist, we weren't allowed to speak to the HMRC to discuss if we were questioned about our settlement money.
You see, those are the bits that I find particularly interesting. I mean, the things about your own welfare, I mean, clearly we've moved on in time in the concept of mental well-being, but that's quite an extraordinary aspect because you have confidential dealings with a therapist, but yet they're still seeking to restrict your ability to be assisted emotionally.
I just add here, because I think it's important that people understand this who are listening, what Zelda's describing sometimes gets dismissed as, oh, well, that was a long time ago. But with the sole exception of the reference to not cooperating with the police, every single clause that she's just described to you, I've seen in NDAs in the last couple of months. These are not, you know, gone away. They're all the same still. And the most outrageous part, which is, we all know, completely unenforceable, is the idea that you can't report a crime. And you don't see that as often. But you do see all these other clauses, including the one about not speaking to therapists and including the one about not encouraging or participating anybody else to bring a complaint. That is absolutely standard 2021.
I was going to come on to the bit about cooperation with a police inquiry, because that struck me as particularly insidious in the context of criminal offence.
Interestingly, the important part about that is if you look at the wording, and any lawyer who looked at the wording will say, well, it doesn't say you can't help the police. It says that we have to use our best endeavours. It's very carefully worded. So within legal speak, it would be considered almost clean. But to two people who have no understanding of the law, to us, that meant we were not allowed to speak to the police.
Yeah.
That was the impression that we were left with. And that actually is what is most relevant, is the impression that you are left with when you leave that negotiating table. And one of the recommendations that was discussed after the Women and Equality Select Committee and the BAE's public inquiry into NDAs was producing NDAs in non-legal language, so that the non-legally aware participants had a better understanding. But as Julie and I will continue to discuss, as far as we're concerned, there is no form of better NDA. There is no use for NDAs to cover up any form of abuse or wrongdoing. But in both cases, what's interesting is the NDA very clearly only protects the perpetrator. If that agreement had been upheld on both sides, we wouldn't be in the situation we were in now, because Harvey completely disregarded that agreement. However, my colleague and I upheld it, my colleague 100%, to the point that she never told anybody in her life, including her husband. And her husband and her family only found out a year ago. And that's when, you know, she spoke to the New York Times journalist for their book, not for the articles, but for 2 years after, you know, we had all come forward. And her family and friends did not still know what had happened to her. And, you know, she tried to kill herself twice because of the weight of carrying the shame and fear of this agreement.
Well, it kind of renders the document and the agreement, which is tantamount to a contract, is it not, void if you don't have parties upholding their side. How is it enforceable? And this is an important question. But
I think as well this goes to the heart of what's going on here, because as we've already mentioned in relation to the issue about police, there are lots of parts of the NDAs that get signed by people that aren't enforceable. I mean, this is first year law school. This is not rocket science. If you put someone under duress, think about the duress that Zelda's been talking about. If people don't fully understand what they're signing, all of these, again, first year contract law, make an agreement unenforceable. And lawyers know that. So there's a bluff going on here, which is that there are whole parts of these agreements that aren't enforceable. But exactly as Zelda has described her experience, if you don't know that, and you know, you're intimidated by the fact that everybody around you seems to know that this is okay, then you accept it. And you know, it's increasingly clear to us, the more work we do on this campaign, that this is the majority of people out there.
Yes, the imbalance of power is really problematic in these scenarios, and that's absolutely evident.
And there's no way around that imbalance of power, because again, that was recommendations made that, you know, that the victim has to have proper legal representation, etc. But that representation will always be unequal. So again, there's another reason why you cannot make NDAs better. There is no making them better. They do not have a place in this area. You can have a confidentiality clause to protect a victim, but you do not need a blanket non-disclosure that goes both ways. There is no ethical moment where protecting a perpetrator is okay. I understand the argument would come down to, as it would have done with us if we'd gone through the criminal route, to he said, she said, and proof. But that actually isn't important in a settlement agreement, because nobody is going to want to talk about something that is going to ruin their reputation. So the perpetrator does not need to be quiet. It's only the victim that they're trying to keep quiet.
We now have legislation going forward in a number of places. And one of the clauses that has been added in a couple of these bills, which, you know, as a lawyer myself, makes some sense, is that this doesn't preclude, not only doesn't preclude trade secrets, which is what these NDAs were originally for, which don't harm third parties and endanger them, but also doesn't include the actual amount of the settlement. You know, it's characteristic for lawyers to ask clients on both sides not to divulge the actual number. Now, there's other ethical problems with that. But what we're talking about aren't those pieces. And we're not talking about protection of trade secrets. We're talking about agreements that force a victim to keep silent about a perpetrator, which then allows that perpetrator to go on and harm other third parties. And, you know, I can't personally think of an example of an NDA that wouldn't harm third parties, because this is information about misconduct that needs to be available to people in order that there is some warning given to a new employer or even the existing workplace that this person has behaved in these ways. Otherwise, you just bury it.
To go further than that, we both also feel that this should cover not just the employment sphere. You know, if you go and you have a faulty breast implant, you should not be then paid off and asked to sign a confidentiality agreement that allows that product to continue being used. you know, this is much broader. We're starting with legislatively, if I could say that, in the employment sphere, because I think that's the first target that we have to hit. And it's the most realistic target for us to hit and the most powerful one. And I believe if we can change employment law, then that will start the ball, you know, the dominoes falling. But this is much broader than just employment, although that's the primary focus at the moment.
So what's your view of the UK legislation that's been proposed in this regard?
Well, we haven't seen an actual bill yet. Zelda, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, Maria Miller, we've been working with Maria Miller. She was the chair of the Women and Equality Select Committee and has really championed this cause and been hugely supportive to myself and now to our campaign. And in fact, she put forward her private members bill really for us on our behalf at Can't Buy My Silence, with the model of the Irish bill that Julie was part of producing for the Republic of Ireland, which is going through the lower, will shortly be going through the lower house in Ireland, which is a very powerful piece of legislation. It's more powerful than the piece of legislation that's just been accepted in California, which is fantastic, which moves it to gender discrimination and race discrimination as well in the employment sphere.
So in terms of the future, what do you envisage the next phase of the campaign? And is there any way in which people who are listening today can do anything to create change or to engage with what you're doing?
Well, I think, as Zelda says, you know, our goal in the campaign, as you'll see if you look at the website can'tbuymysilence.com, is legislative change. And, you know, it might be worth, for this audience in particular, saying a few words about why legislative change rather than asking individual businesses or regulators, legal regulators, to make these changes. We certainly are very supportive of and encouraging businesses, but also legal regulators, to look at their own rules and practices. And we have seen a little bit of movement from the Solicitors Regulation Authority, Regulatory Authority in England and Wales on this. They have issued some advice on NDAs. But we are not convinced that going business to business, regulator to regulator, is really going to fix this. I also have some skepticism about the ability of the regulator, quite honestly, having worked with regulators all over North America, to reach into these closed door meetings and ensure that people aren't still doing this, because it's such an incredibly ingrained part of the culture. So that's why legislation.
That's why really our utmost focus is on legislation, because it has to be changed at the very, very root.
We're trying to start this as a global trend that will start to happen, that these bills will be introduced. And there are many different ways of trying to do this, and we're all struggling with the best way to do it, but we know what our goal is, and that is to stop these secrets within secrets happening.
And in terms of how people can help directly at the moment by you know, help our cause, is if you go to the website, Julie's created a huge resource there for people who may need help on information about NDAs and how to cope if you're being offered an NDA, what to do if you've signed an NDA. But also we've provided a platform for people to share their stories about their experience of signing an NDA, which is incredibly important, because one of the things that's very difficult is getting data and information out there, because, you know, the nature of an NDA
is secret.
But by people sharing their experiences, which are completely anonymized, and we're very, very careful about making sure that that stays as such, even if people want to break their silence, we can't offer protection to them. This begins to help other people understand. I think it's a very useful place for lawyers to look. It's a very useful place for people who have been silenced to look. And the people who've started sharing already have said what an enormous help it has been to them, being able to, even in an anonymous way, have their voice heard. So yeah, by sharing stories, by putting anybody you know who has been in this situation, pointing them to our website. We're also, we have a petition and we need people to write to their member of parliament. And we're crowdfunding because, you know, we're both doing this out of necessity from our own experience. So it's not funded. So, you know, this is a subject that is only really going to get aired properly if we get more public support, as well as the work that we're doing behind closed doors with legislators.
Yes, and I'm an organisation like the IBA. Obviously, it's the global voice of the legal profession. So we want our members to be more aware all over the world, whichever country they're in, whatever state of legislation looks like in their jurisdiction. I think this is a really powerful and important conversation, which is rightfully now being aired. The use of NDAs in sexual wrongdoing cases is controversial. If they cover up abuse without consequence for the perpetrator, many would argue that they are immoral and highly damaging. Others, including many reasonable and well-regarded lawyers I have spoken with, say it provides victims with choice and avoids the need for the expense, stress, and public scrutiny of litigation, although a desire to crack down on their improper use is to be welcomed. It is interesting to read that since our discussion, universities in England and Wales have pledged to end the use of NDAs to silence complainants in sexual harassment cases, which is backed by the government. At the date of this podcast, 6 university vice-chancellors have signed the pledge, but government has called upon all of them to sign.